Hey, Chad, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah.
How about...
No, not again.
Okay, what about...
I just saw that last week.
Okay, oh, I got it.
Wait. You want me to watch what?
Hi, Chad.
Yo!
So, a couple weeks ago, you showed me a star-studded shithole.
Well, it was an objectively low-quality Star Wars movie.
Okay, fair enough. So, I thought... Retaliation's the wrong word.
Okay.
Well, so this month, I wanted to present to you a star-studded piece of crap.
Well, epic fail.
Yeah. Really?
This was fun.
So, hi everybody. Thanks for joining us.
You smell great. You smell great. Especially you. Yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. So, this is You Want Me to Watch What? Where every couple of weeks, Chad and I challenge each other or suggest movies that the other hasn't seen. Mm-hmm. And we talk about it. So this week, I showed Chad the 1984 PBS classic, The Boy Who Loved Trolls.
This is a true fact.
This is a true fact, yes. This is about as early 80s PBS-esque as you get.
Well, this was still 1970s. I mean, the 70s. We found out it was filmed in Cleveland.
Yes.
I mean, the 80s didn't show up in Cleveland
till at least 86.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this has got a very 70s vibe all the way around. So, let's go over what we saw, and then you can tell me why I epically failed it.
Yeah, you go right ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll chime in. Don't worry about me.
So we meet 12-year-old Paul. He's a very imaginative young boy.
Mm.
Believes in trolls.
As you do.
Yeah. The first part of the film, if we can call it that, is seen setting up Paul. He's sort of mischievous, but not in a bad way. He's easily distracted, especially when girls are involved. He's at that age.
Mm-hmm.
He's out with his friends exploring. They find a turtle. They find a magician.
Yeah.
You know, typical 1984 12-year-old kid stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gets home. His father comes back from a big business trip. Says, hey, let's go out to dinner. Well, Paul's got homework.
What's he doing watching television?
Yes. So the logical solution is, okay, Paul can stay here and do his homework and... we'll go out to dinner. So they leave Paul all alone. He decides, you know what? Enough of this shenanigans. I don't want to do my homework. I'm going to go troll hunting. So he goes out. The best place to look for trolls is under bridges. As he's wandering around, a plane.
Yeah, airplane.
Airplane lands in the middle of the street. And out comes the dad from Alf. Because nobody remembers Max Wright's name. It's the dad from Alf.
I called him Budget Don Knotts.
Budget Don Knotts, yeah. And he says that they're looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Well, that also happens to be the name of a restaurant right there. They all get back on the plane. Paul wasn't supposed to, but he does. And an AI program is looking for a legitimate pot of gold at the end of the rainbow because of... billionaire bridge tycoon wants the pot of gold.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Paul and the bridge tycoon bond over a chess game that he was about to lose to the AI and gives Paul an IOU for one bridge because bridges are the future.
It's a Chekhov's gun if ever there was one.
Yep. Paul is thrown off the plane as a rainbow alert happens and they got to take off. So he's walking along.
That's why I thought it was taking place in like San Diego, San Francisco.
No.
No, that's not the thing.
No. And he's still wandering around, and, you know, a phone booth rings, and it's his father, because clearly that happens. And then all these, you know, suited men in sunglasses start questioning him, are you Paul, trying to, you know, it's a very tense moment in the movie, if we can call it that.
Yeah, I think we can call it a movie. I mean, it's a made-for-TV movie, but okay, so was Star Wars Holiday Special. Yeah, made-for-TV movie.
Fair. He runs into a building and encounters a scientist who studies rainbows and is using the same AI program as the tycoon.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembers Paul. Well, Paul gets kicked out of the room and all the doors are shut and Paul's not welcome anymore. It's at this point that the narrator of the film shows up. A doorman who we've previously met in passing.
Mm-hmm.
So only so much to kind of tell us who Paul is and point himself out in the crowd. Kid knows the doorman. Not a big deal. Well, who are you and why are you here? Well, I'm from a place called The Silence. The what? Never mind. It's
not important.
It's not important. So he tells Paul, you know, the doors are open if you just want to use them. Just make your choice. Mm-hmm. And as he opens the doors, there's, you know, giant versions of the billionaire and giant versions of the scientist and giant versions of his father all telling him ways to be adults.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally opens one that leads into a forest. Well, he goes exploring and he meets Ofodi the troll, played by Sam Waterston.
Yes, that is a thing.
Ofodi is throwing a party for his 100 years. It's at this point Socrates the turtle shows up, played by William H. Macy.
Hello, William H. Macy.
Yes. Then Kalati the mermaid shows up.
Because of course she does.
Her hair is the gold at the end of the rainbow.
So that's where that came from.
Yes. And wouldn't you know it, the tycoon is hot on their heels.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, Ofodi's cabin, under the bridge, has an elevator that takes him down into Kaladi's domain. Under the sea. And it is down there he discovers that children can stay children forever. It is a fun place of frivolity. This is when we learn that, apparently, if Ofodi doesn't find a child who believes in trolls, every 100 years, he dies.
Mm-hmm.
And his 100 years are up. It is...
last day.
Yep. It has been 99 years and 364 days. But before they can fully explain the situation, there's a problem. Apparently, the tycoon has discovered the bridge and is going to blow it up
to get
to the gold at the bottom. Paul, being the precocious child he is, tries to cash in his IOU for one bridge.
If you show a gun in Act 1, you gotta go off by Act 3.
The tycoon says, you know what, you're right, but I never said the bridge would be intact.
This man was raised by genies.
Yes. So the countdown to blow it up continues, and all of a sudden time stops. The doorman's back. Apparently, he has weird powers.
He's from the silence.
Yes, that's true. He can't stop time forever, though, so eventually things are going to play out. They go back to Ofodi, and he is dying, and the only way to save him is if Paul stays forever.
Mm-hmm.
Paul can't do that.
Cannot.
But he convinces the doorman to take Ofodi home. Coincidentally enough, Ofodi is from the silence. He slid down the rainbow for fun and couldn't slide back up it, so he's been stuck on Earth for the last, you know, God knows how many years. And the place where they are is full of children that wanted to stay with Ofodi. Those are the kids that got eaten by trolls. How silly. So he convinces the doorman to take Ofodi home, who holds time until all the kids are safe and Kaladi and Socrates, whatever. And he goes back topside, where the tycoon and the scientist are all wondering, well, the gold should be here. We had readings, but now it's gone. And Paul tells them, well, the gold's gone forever, and you're never going to get it. Oh, also, I don't believe in you. And they disappear.
And poof, they disappear in a puff of logic.
Then Paul wakes up. So, yeah.
It is certainly... Well, don't forget the punchline, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Paul wakes up and he's all gloomy
right. Because it was a dream, and he goes out, and the magician is still there, and as he's walking by, he sees Paul is sad and flips a card out of nowhere and gives it to him, and on the other side is a picture of a troll, and it says, "Do you still believe in magic?" And he lights up, and credits.
Mm-hmm. So.
So, yeah. I first saw this when I was a wee tyke because it was something that my grandmother had recorded off of PBS for all the grandkids to watch. And it's just one of those things that stayed in the back of my mind forever. And for decades, I couldn't remember the name of it. I just had images stuck in my head and it was driving me nuts.
Well, this is certainly the kind of movie that would make you go nuts.
And the only way I found out was when we were cleaning out their house, after my grandma had passed away, and she had a huge collection of VHSs of stuff she had recorded from TV. And I'm flipping through, and I'm like, son of a bitch, the boy who loved trolls.
There it is!
You know, I'm in my late 30s at this point, so I'm like, oh, only took me 30 years to figure it out. Because I hadn't seen it since I was 8 or 9. So, please... Chad, tell me your thoughts on The Boy Who Loved Trolls.
So, first off, totally star-studded, you know, TV movie.
Yeah.
You know, Sam Waterston, who would go on to all manner of things.
Mm-hmm.
James Caron. James, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I think James Caron, who was the sleazy, you know, developer from Poltergeist.
Yep.
Joshua Mostel. He was the crazy heavy set, you know, wise man
yep.
kind of thing, mm-hmm. who is the son of Zero Mostel of Broadway fame.
Yep.
And who played Herod in the 1970s Jesus Christ Superstar and sang the Go-Go Dancer, you know, You Are the Christ song.
Yep.
This is a perfect encapsulation of a childhood movie.
Yes.
Where we are meant full on to just dig into this 12-year-old and see the world through his eyes and through his experiences and so forth. I cannot imagine a 12-year-old having that kind of free reign through a city like Cleveland. Then again, I live in 2021, soon to be 2022, or now I guess you're listening to this, 2022.
Or whenever you're listening to this, insert year here.
And things in Cleveland are different.
Yes, neither of us were 12 in 1984.
True.
Was 3.
You know, this is a post Drew Carey Cleveland.
Yes. It's his fault.
Clearly. Damn it. This movie is helped along in a lot of ways by not overstaying its welcome. It's just shy of an hour long.
Yes.
It is a TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a TV movie that's allowed to be said that way because as PBS, they didn't have all the commercials breaking in.
That's true.
And so no big commercial breaks, you know, so on and so forth. Anyway, at just under an hour long, it has its story to tell and it tells it. It tells it fast, and it's allowed to be wacky. The airplane that lands in
yep.
Cleveland, the rich guy with the giant cigars that's handing out bridges as IOUs,
yep.
That will only talk to his secretary through the phone from 4 feet away.
Yes.
In the same room.
Yes.
Well, in the same cabin of the airplane.
Yes.
the turtle that turns into William H. Macy.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing a turtle shirt.
Wearing a sailor's outfit colorized to look like a turtle.
You know, and so there's all these little nods and winks for me as an adult. I didn't see it as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, so I couldn't tell you if I'd seen this as a kid, I'd probably look back at I'd watch this now and be kind of embarrassed that I watched it as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, because it'd be like, oh, why was this stuck in my head? Or... like, that's what I'm imagining you were experiencing watching this again.
Yeah.
It's like, Why did I give this real estate in my brain? But for me, watching it for the first time now, I'm just like, wow, this is exactly the kind of thing that as a kid I would have happily watched the hour and been like, yep, this is great. I don't know who any of these actors are. I don't care. You know, half of it would have just been the fantasy of getting to walk around without constant adult supervision.
Yeah.
But because you've got actors like William H. Macy and Sam Waterston and James Kell, you know, because you have and Max.
Right.
Because you have these caliber of actors in this that know the kind of movie they're making.
Yes.
And they dive right into it and sell it as campy as they can be, and in some cases as earnestly as they can be. You know, they're very much the Adam West in the 60s Batman. They're playing dead serious.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're all in. They've bought into this silly, weird role that they're doing, but they've bought in. And so the wackiness of what's going on around just plays into it that much more. And so you get the, because a kid would take that seriously.
Yes.
You know, and so having the adults take it seriously, it's only as an adult you go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. We're not looking at really super high stakes here. No. So do I think that everyone should watch it? No.
Although it is on YouTube.
This is a movie, though, that I think, again, if you watch this as a kid, you absolutely should get one of your friends who hasn't seen it to watch it with you. And maybe you have a beer. Maybe you just have some chips and dip, you know.
Yeah.
And you watch it. It's not good.
No.
You know, it's not. I don't think it was really meant to be groundbreaking.
No.
You know, it's a screenplay of a stage play.
Yeah.
Based on a storybook. So, I mean, it. You can just kind of let it be at that. But I'd say if you got an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, yeah, once through,
yeah,
they'll probably be okay with it.
I'm not showing this to my 9-year-old, but yes.
Well, I won't show it to mine because of the cat thing.
Also, I don't want to have to watch it on repeat 36 times in, you know, a day.
Is that a thing that would happen?
Yes.
Huh.
Once my child decides they like something, they like it until they
all
don't.
All you have to do is tell him that it's your favorite show and he'll never want to watch it again.
That's true. That has happened. Wow. Parenting's weird.
Parenting is weird.
And apparently I'm too good at picking movies because I was really, honestly, no joke, folks. I had set this aside long time ago for, okay, when Chad crosses a line, he's watching this. And apparently, I'm just too damn good at picking movies for Chad. As you've stated numerous times.
Bear in mind, my bar is really low.
God, that's true.
I mean, I have once unironically watched Santa Claus Conquers the Martians and had a good time. I have watched Manos, The Hands of Fate in a group of people and been upset that they were MST3K-ing it. You gotta lower the bar, dude.
Folks,
or raise the glass.
Folks, this is a call to arms and a cry for help. I need a movie that Chad will absolutely hate, and Chad needs counseling.
Well, see, here's the thing. It's not going to be the movie that's objectively bad that I don't like.
Yeah.
It's going to be the Army of the Dead. You know, it's going to be the high budget. How could you not have seen this? This was the biggest movie in 1987 or something.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be, you know, one of those movies that I'm going to watch and be like, eh. You know, how could you not like Nixon? You know, I think it was 1994, 96. You know, there was a movie.
Anthony Hopkins was great in that, damn.
You know, and that's the thing. And I'll be like, Anthony Hopkins was good. The movie was just kind of, eh. You know, how could you not like Kevin Costner's in JFK?
Back and to the left.
You know, that's what's going to be just the, I get it.
Yeah.
But see, these really, the ones that are really bad, I just kind of enjoy because those are the movies I'd make. You know? You know, those are the kind of things that's like, you know what? If I had $5,000 for a camera, you know, that's exact. Velocipaster is exactly the kind of movie
I would make. Oh, my God.
You know, is those kind of things. It's just like, hey, guys, I've got a script treatment. It's really weird, but I think we'll have a whole lot of fun with it so long as we pretend it's serious. I once was in a student film called The Making of Godzilla the Musical. It is awful. And if I had a VHS player in this house, Justin would watch it tonight. But I don't. I have the script upstairs. He can read it.
If I'd known that, I would have brought one with me.
Well, now you know for next time.
All right. And speaking of next time, I think it's your turn.
I have a couple of ideas. We'll see if we can do a little bit... Let's see if we can do a little bit less objectively awful and move into subjectively awful.
Okay.